Hi, welcome to episode 395 of the Fantastic Forecast. I'm David Elliott. Hold on for a second while I fiddle with my new lightsaber. It's got one long blade for killing people, and two short blades for a smooth, smooth shave. Today, Fantastic Four, 395, from December 1994. Payback, by Tom DeFalco and Paul Ryan. Cleveland, Ohio. A CB bar along the river. Marvel's most popular character created in the 1970s sits alone, smoking a cigar and boozing it up. No, it's not Howard the Duck, unfortunately. It's Wolverine. He's remembering the time a couple years ago when he got into a bit of a scrape with Ben Grimm, the Thing, and slashed his face with his claws, screwing up his already screwed up face even further. He's made plans to meet with the Thing and, patch things up. No pun intended. Ben lands in an FF ship, gets out, enters the bar, and Wolverine offers him a beer. Ben says, "Nah, I want you to start weeping, wailing, and begging for mercy. Not that it'll do much good." In case you haven't figured it out yet, Ben Grimm still holds a grudge over the whole face-slashing incident, and he wants to clobber Mr. Wolverine. Outside the bar, Ben Grimm's arrival has not gone unnoticed. And no, it's not by Howard the Duck, unfortunately. How could they do a story in Cleveland and not include Howard the Duck? It's a travesty. So this guy, dressed up like a bum, sitting by the trash cans, pulls out a radio and calls his boss. He says, "The pigeon is in the coop." His boss is the Mad Thinker, and he says that he's ready for stage two of his master plan. And Ben Grimm is as good as dead. The Thinker wants to destroy the Fantastic Four, one person at a time. Maybe he doesn't know this yet, but at this point, the only person in the FF is Ben Grimm, the Fantastic One. Kill him, and we're left with the Fantastic None. N-O-N-E, not N-U-N. We learn that without Reed Richards around, the Mad Thinker has been able to bug the FF's phone lines and intercept the call from Wolverine, knowing about the meeting with Ben Grimm in advance. And while the Mad Thinker's real body is in a high-security prison, he's able to transfer his mind to one of his robot duplicates and cause all kinds of trouble. Back in Cleveland, we see that Ben Grimm has a little stowaway on his ship, an ant-sized stowaway by the name of Scott Lang, Ant-Man. He's worried about the Thing trying to get revenge on Wolverine, so he's come to help, using his powerful strength, the strength of a normal man. Meanwhile, back in Arizona, the She-Hulk is trying to kill the Human Torch by throwing giant boulders at him. Oh wait, they're just having fun. Johnny blasts a rock into pieces, entertaining some of the archaeology students on the ground. Johnny lands and She-Hulk says that she's sorry to hear about Reed, and she can't believe he's really gone. "You're not alone," Johnny says. She-Hulk tells Johnny she'll do anything to help, even temporarily rejoin the team. Johnny says she's talking to the wrong person. He doesn't even want to go back and join the team at this point. They come across that blonde girl that helped them out earlier, Lyja in disguise, and Johnny tells She-Hulk to get lost. But before he can get to Lyja, the old archaeology professor butts in and starts chatting away, apologizing for acting like a douchebag last issue. Lyja slips away and out of Johnny's sight, but finds herself face to face with Bridget O'Neill, who saw her turn into a big, giant turtle monster last issue. Bridget wants to have a little chat. Lyja, not so much. Back in Cleveland. Why Cleveland? Why are they in Cleveland? I guess they figure if they get in a big fight, destroy a lot of buildings, and wreck the town, it really wouldn't make much of a difference. No one's gonna notice. Wolverine tells Ben that he can tell he still harbors a grudge, and Ben replies, "That's putting it way too mildly. Take a good look at what you've done to me, pal." Wolverine replies, "I'm sorry. I honestly didn't mean to scar your face. I was just reacting on pure animal instinct, lashing out at you without considering the consequences. But now it's time for those consequences, namely a severe thrashing by a very pissed off Ben Grimm." Ben smashes the table, prepares to pound Wolverine with a big rocky fist. Wolvie pops his claws, but before they can get into a fight, Ant-Man runs into the room and tells them that they shouldn't start fighting each other because they have company. Three of the Mad Thinker's men, or robots, burst into the bar. Back in Latveria, Sue wants Nathaniel to tell her who this other son of his is that they want to go after. And what about Reed? Is he dead or not? Nathaniel says that even though she's his favorite daughter-in-law, how many daughters-in-law does he have? If she's the only one, that compliment is meaningless. It's like when my mom tells me I'm her second favorite son. She's only got two. He says he doesn't want to answer any questions now, and Sue threatens to choke him with a force field if he doesn't start answering questions right away. He replies, "But would you believe my answers?" So she pouts and sulks away. Down the hall, the flaming apparition of Sue Richards from the Doom version of 1966 appears again, and now the Sue of 1994 is really confused. So am I. Back in the bar in Cleveland, the Thing and Wolverine are fighting it out with Mad Thinker's men, while Ant-Man just watches, feeling helpless. Like, what is he gonna do? Fight them with his strength? The strength of a normal man? Or stick some ants on him? Wolverine wants to know why he's being attacked too. He has no previous history with the Mad Thinker. But one of the bad guys replies, "You're just included in the basic job." And Wolverine is offended that they're not getting paid extra for trying to take him out. Soon, Ben and Logan have defeated the three attackers, and another wall crashes down, and in comes a big robot calling himself the Thinker's Super Android Model F4. He says he has come to facilitate their destruction. One of his fists looks like the Thing's big rocky hand, and the other hand is shooting flames like the Human Torch. Back with Bridget O'Neill, Lijah tells her that her name is Laura Green. She's a late addition to Professor Jansen's class, and her paperwork must have been misplaced. And she says she didn't even know that anyone has noticed her. Bridget says that yes, she's been noticed all right. By your boyfriend, the Human Torch? Lijah asks. Bridget shrugs off the suggestion, saying that she could never get involved with someone like Johnny Storm. After all, he's recently divorced, and according to the tabloids, his ex-wife still loves Johnny, and Johnny still might love her. Bridget says, a piece of friendly advice, keep your distance. Lijah, meanwhile, is thinking, perhaps this disguise can be used to help ease Johnny's pain and heal his heart. Maybe Laura Green is the perfect woman to make him forget Lijah. Oh, this is the best mindfuck yet.
I have to hand it to you. It's the best mindfuck yet.
Yeah, that's what I just said. Back in Cleveland, the Mad Thinker's robot is giving the Thing and Wolverine a hard time. Ant-Man is trying to think of a way he can help, and back with Sue and Nathaniel, she comes back again and says, Nathan, I've waited long enough. I demand an explanation. And surprisingly, since he was so adamant about not saying anything earlier this issue, Papa Richards decides to spill the beans. After doing a little time traveling, Nathan found himself rather injured and back on Earth, where he encountered a young gypsy woman. She nursed him back to health, using magic, witchcraft even, and they fell in love, and they had a baby, and that baby grew up to be the absolute monarch of Latveria. Yes, Dr. Doom is Reed's brother. Sue thinks that's bullshit, and fortunately, it is bullshit. We all know that Reed and Dr. Doom aren't brothers. They're just rival bloggers. Back with Ben and Wolverine, the fight with the big robot continues, and they're not doing very well. Ant-Man creates a slingshot and shoots himself into the robot's onto the robot's shoulder. He leaves a canister of shrinking gas, and he hops off. The robot shrinks down to the size of an action figure, and Ben flicks the robot into the river. With that out of the way, Ben wants to get the business of fighting with Wolverine started already. Scott Lang interjects and asks, hasn't there been enough mindless violence for one day? And if She-Hulk were there, she would mention the fact that they only have one page left. No time for mindless violence anymore. So the next day, at the prison, the vault, a guard comes over and gives the Mad Thinker a letter. He opens it up, and it's a photo of Ant-Man, the Thing, and Wolverine, signed, Having a Wonderful Time, Wish You Were Here, which is the first and only time anyone has ever sent such a piece of mail from Cleveland. So that brings us to the end of another year of Fantastic Four adventures, and shit. I just remembered. I haven't done the annual yet. Welcome to episode 395, part 2 of the Fantastic Forecast. Today, Fantastic Four, annual 27 from 1994. Mobius's Trip by Mark Gruenwald and Mike G. Gustavich. So this is the last of the horrible 64-page annuals from the 1990s, and the first one without Herb Trimpe in quite a few years. After this annual, Marvel even retires the annuals for a few years until 1998, which is a big relief. Having to read these giant-sized annuals again is the worst part of doing this podcast. To start with, I will say that the artwork of Mike Gustavich is much better than the stuff Herb Trimpe was doing, but that's not really high praise. The art here isn't anything special, it's not bad, it's not great, it's merely bland, serviceable. This issue features the characters from the Time Variance Authority, again. These are the guys who look like writer Mark Gruenwald, which makes it odd that Mark Gruenwald is writing this issue. And the story begins in the office of one of those Mark Gruenwald lookalikes, Mr. Mobius, the senior executive middle manager of the Time Variance Authority, a large organization that keeps track of all the different multiverses and time travel shenanigans and stuff. Mr. Mobius has this hallucination of Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, stretching across the room toward him, but then the image disappears. Mr. Mobius gets a call from his boss, Mr. Alternity, summoning him to his office. So Mr. Mobius heads out past all the hundreds of desks of diligently working TVA agents who bid him good morning. He knocks on Mr. Alternity's door. He's told to come in and sit down. And Mr. Alternity tells him a file is missing. A file regarding the divergences of Earth 1271138, a subsection of the Kang Dynasty. Mr. Mobius is told to find the file within 25 work cycles, or else he will be demoted. Mr. Mobius leaves the office and thinks to himself that he has Reed Richards to blame for this mess. Mobius had brought the Fantastic Four to the TVA Null Time Zone to put them on trial for messy time infractions back in FF 353 and 354, but Reed was able to steal the software with the records pertaining to their reality line, and the FF escaped on the Cross Time Express, a train that travels through time and space. Of course, without this information, Mobius doesn't even know where the location of Reed Richards' universe is. And back in that universe, where Reed Richards is dead.
I'm not dead!
The three members of the FF, along with unofficial member Ant-Man, are walking along in Washington Square Park. And I'm not sure when this story takes place, since all the recent issues of the FF seem to occur one right after the other. Ant-Man Scott mentions that he misses his daughter, and Johnny says he feels weird walking right out in the open after all his legal troubles recently. And Ben is wrapped up tight with his scarred-up face covered. Suddenly, a taxicab jumps the curb, careens out of control, almost hits a woman with her child, but Sue puts up an invisible force ramp to carry the car away from the park. Johnny flames on and flies up in the air after the car to see what's going on. The driver says his brakes don't work, so Johnny burns the door off and he pulls the driver out. And then, as the car falls, Ben Grimm does what he does best. He catches the cab, mangles it, and sets it on the ground. Actually, the car doesn't look too bad. Usually, Ben does far worse damage. The cabbie says it's not his fault. The back door opens up, and a passenger gets out. It's Mr. Mobius from the TVA. Johnny is surprised. He didn't see a passenger in the back a minute ago, and the FF recognize him as the guy from the Time Variance Authority. And then, the trunk pops open, and just as peace, the time-traveling bounty hunter pops out and tells the FF they're under arrest. He zaps the three of them with a displacement ray, and they disappear. Scott Lang has turned into Ant-Man, and he shrinks and he hops a ride, hitchhiking on Justice Peace's costume. Back in the Null Time Zone, the FF wake up in this big white void. Johnny flames on and he tries to fly off, but he bumps into a ceiling that he can't see. They try to use their powers without any success. Suddenly, the floor opens up and Sue falls out and lands in a chair in Mr. Mobius's office. And he has one question for Sue. Where is her husband? He can't find him anywhere. Sue explains that Reed is dead.
I'm not dead!
Okay, Sue explains that Reed is missing after a battle with Dr. Doom. She doesn't know where he is, but she sure would like to find him. She asks how his scans for Reed are going, and Mobius says, I'll do the questioning around here, if you please. He tells her that he needs that file to be replaced, the one that she and Reed erased. She asks why he doesn't go back in time and pluck Reed away from the moment just before he was seemingly killed by Dr. Doom. Mr. Mobius replies that he can't, due to Article 451, Section 10, Paragraph 79, which states that no character in an annual can participate in actions that will have long-term lasting effects on the main series, unless said annual is written and drawn by the same creative team as the actual monthly comic book publication. Sue says,
"So, I can't help you? You can't help me? Let me and my teammates go."
But Mobius says he can't. Sue belts him in the face with a force field, knocking him over, and she runs away.
Boy, I wish I could run away from this annual.
Mobius calls for help from a group of three guys who look just like Justice Peace. There's Justice Truth, Justice Might, and Justice Liberty. And as for us readers, it's just us puking. Ant-Man is there, lurking around at ant-sized, and he leaps on the helmet of Justice Truth, or is it Justice Might? The three Justices hop on flying motorcycles and fly away. Back with Ben and Johnny, they're still stuck in that white void of a room when Mobius appears. He thinks that Sue will come to free her teammates, so he's going to stay there and wait for her. Ben tries to punch him, but he has some kind of force field. Sue's running around, invisible, but she runs into the three Justices, who can see her with their special goggles. One of them is about to shoot Sue with a laser gun, but Ant-Man returns to normal size, he grabs the Justice, and he accidentally shoots one of his co-workers, vaporizing him. They knock out the other two Justices, and Ant-Man suggests they put on the two Justice Peace uniforms, which serves two purposes. One, they can walk around the TVA undetected, and two, Scott gets to see Sue with her clothes off as she changes. So, a minute later, they're in the Justice outfits, and they head off through the halls of the TVA. Back with Johnny and Ben, Ben wants Mobius to tell them what he plans to do with them, but Mobius is busy on his computer trying to find that missing data. The two Justices, Scott and Sue in disguise, enter the room. They say they have the Invisible Woman as a prisoner, but she's invisible, which is why Mobius can't see her. Mobius says he plans to drop all three members of the Fantastic Four off at a disposal site, which doesn't sound like a very nice place. So Scott aims his gun at Mobius, and Sue tells Ben and Johnny to come along. They're getting out of there. Mobius reminds Sue that escape will be difficult since the Cross-Time Express doesn't stop at their reality anymore. Ben tells him to find a way, or there will be punching involved. Mobius replies, "Go ahead, kill me. I have no future here anyway." After losing all the data, he's going to be demoted. Scott asks why he just doesn't go apply for a job somewhere else, like a competitor to the TVA. Mobius thinks about it. There is the Congress of Realities, the Kang Dynasty, the Delabrick Consortium, the Department of Temporal Investigations. Scott tells him to go apply for a job, let them know he's available, send out some resumes, get his name out there. Scott sounds like my mother. Mobius says he can't do that, and then Ben puts his hands on Mobius' head like he's about to snap his neck, while Sue, Scott, and Johnny discuss ways to help Mr. Mobius. So the group heads to the Cross-Time Station, and they catch a train to Chronopolis. They arrive, and Mobius asks to see their boss, Lord Kang. That seems like the last place I would go apply for a job. If you thought your boss was bad, can you imagine working for Kang? So Mobius meets with Kang for the job interview, and he gets it, with double the salary, 10 weeks of paid vacation, and 3 personal assistants. Shit, now I'm jealous. Maybe I should apply for a job with Kang. And then, the FF attacks Kang's guards. They storm into Kang's throne room, and they confront this big floating head of Kang. They ask for help finding Reed Richards, and Kang asks what he gets in return. Sue says they helped him land a new employee, Mr. Mobius. Kang says they will find Reed in one divergent reality. Sue replies,
"Then Reed is alive somewhere?"
And Kang says,
"I didn't say that. I only said you would find him."
Then he says he's bored, and his big holographic head disappears. And with that, the FF are teleported back to New York City. And later, at TVA headquarters, Mr. Mobius heads to Mr. Alternity's office to tender his resignation. Alternity was ready to demote Mobius, but upon hearing that Mobius is going to leave, he offers to match Kang's offer and promote Mobius instead. Here, Mark Gruenwald has perfectly captured the American business world. You may suck at your job, but if you know the right people, you can still get promoted upward. So Mobius heads back to his office and continues working on his biography. Memoirs of a Middle Manager by Mobius M. Mobius. Chapter 9, Career in Crisis. All about how he owes a debt of gratitude to the Fantastic Four. Except Reed Richards. He still hates that guy. Poor Reed. Everyone's out to get that motherfucker. Good thing he's dead.
I'm not dead!
And that brings us to our second story. And it wouldn't be an early 1990s FF annual without Cosmos, Cubic, and Molecule Man. And once again, they're back! And this time, in a story called Molecular Psychology by Lynn Kaminsky and Mike Gustavich. The story begins, beyond space, beyond time, with the cosmic being, the Living Tribunal, addressing his fellow cosmic beings, Eternity, Master Order, and Lord Chaos, my favorite of the three. He says they have participated in an experiment to allow infinite powers to fall into the hands of mere mortals, by letting bits of energy slip out of the universe of the Beyonders. Beyonders? There's more than one? Oh, no. So this led to the creation of the Cosmic Cubes, and now, on Earth, two products of that experiment are about to interact. He suggests the four of them watch, so they pull up the Planet Earth live feeds and have a look. And back on Earth, in the apartment of Owen Rees, the Molecule Man, he's sitting alone, thinking about his ex-girlfriend Volcana, and about the humiliation he suffered at the hands of the Beyonder. And in his sadness, he starts to wish he could be someone else. And in his sadness, he starts to wish he could be someone else and didn't have to feel this way. And his body starts coursing with power and energy. He blows a big hole in the wall of his apartment, so much for that security deposit, and he turns from being his usually nerdy self into the Molecule Man, the evil-looking Molecule Man we haven't seen in a very long time, with a supervillain costume, more muscles, a bald head, and a bad attitude. He wants to get revenge on his enemies, the Fantastic Four, Iron Man, and the Avengers. He must really hate Iron Man to specifically mention him by name, even though he's a member of the Avengers. But first, he wants to get revenge on the Beyonder. But last we saw of the Beyonder, he had a sex change, and now he calls himself Cosmos. And meanwhile, Cosmos is hanging out with her buddy, Cubic, when she gets attacked by a beam of light, giving her a headache, causing her to fall to the ground. And this beam of light, this power, rips Cosmos apart, and it starts pulling out the essence of the Beyonder out of her. Cosmos starts to fade away, and she's dying, so Cubic knows they better head to Earth. And on Earth, the Beyonder pops in, and he finds the Molecule Man itching for a fight. They take turns zapping each other, they end up moving the fight into space. The Beyonder claims to be infinitely powerful, and is surprised that Molecule Man is putting up such a fight. As Molecule Man uses his powers, he inadvertently causes all kinds of weird things to happen. A planet in a distant galaxy is transformed into antimatter. In a two-dimensional universe known as Flatland, boy, that name is right on the nose, isn't it? They find themselves developing a new attribute called height, becoming three-dimensional. A statue on the Skrull homeworld starts to cry mammalian blood. A potted plant acquires superhuman intellect. A member of the Watchers goes blind. Four businessmen at lunch discover that their lunches want to eat them. And someone says, "Wow, FF Annual 27 is really, really good." Yes, amazing, unbelievable things are happening. Molecule Man continues to let Beyonder have it, and they end up back down on Earth, with Beyonder laying on the ground, defeated. Molecule Man is literally kicking the Beyonder while he's down, but then Cubic and Cosmos pop up. Cubic asks Molecule Man to quit. He needs to put the essence of the Beyonder back into Cosmos, or it could cause unthinkable havoc across the multiversal cosmography. The universal what? Molecule Man doesn't care about the multiversal cosmography. Sounds like a phony course they might teach at the University of North Carolina. Universal cosmography. But Cubic continues to beg Molecule Man to save the life of his transsexual buddy. Molecule Man thinks about it, and finally, he decides, okay. He turns back into normal Owen Rees, and uses his powers to put the Beyonder back into the body of Cosmos, who gets up, kisses Owen on the forehead, and thanks him. Cubic speaks for a minute, giving Owen compliments to pump up his ego, so he won't be such a dick in the future. They say goodbye to Owen, and disappear. Owen returns to his apartment, and thinks that tearing apart galaxies is easy, but having feelings and emotions, that's tough. And finally, back at the TVA with Mr. Mobius, he's up to his neck in paperwork. And thanks to the shenanigans of the Molecule Man, things are about to get worse. He opens another door, and he sees a whole new mountain of paperwork for him to go through. And the story ends with him saying,
"Go!"
That's a reference to The Simpsons, which was a popular TV show 20 years ago. Some of you who are young might not have...
Oh, wait. Go!
So that's it for this year's annual. Whew. I hate these things. So you can download other episodes of this podcast at iTunes or find them all at www.podcastff.podbean.com. And if you have any questions about the Fantastic Four, about this podcast, or if you need relationship advice, you can email me at podcastff@gmail.com. So long, kids. This podcast is over. With the cosmic being, the living tribunal, the living tribunal.
Does this sound right?
A statue on the scroll. Fuck world, cosmography.
Shitty shit.